heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
What if President Trump loses in 2020? That's something I know some of you say, well, that's not going to happen. Listen, I understand positive thinking. I get all of that. And I understand people that are being assertive with their thoughts and ideas. I get that as well. But, you know, elections can be tricky. And unless people get out and vote in any election, you never know really what's going to happen at the end of the day. Hence 2016, you just never know where the results of an election are going to be. So I pose the question to you today, what if President Trump loses in 2020? So what would be the next thing that would happen to the country, to the nation? You know, we have to look at who is in the opposing party, the political party. So we have to look at that list of candidates and say, okay, who would that be? And we really don't know at this point whether it would be a Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren or, as they say, Pete Buttigieg, is it they call him or whatever, you know? I think a lot of the others are dropping pretty quick here. So the list is coming down to a handful. You can package about anything. You can really package anything, and you can market it to the people. It's interesting, people. It's very, very interesting when you look at where America finds itself. I find there's a lot of people that are shockingly surprised, or better word, maybe horrified, that in America we're actually having conversations at the water cooler about socialism, a.k.a. communism, a.k.a. Bolshevik, a.k.a. progressive, a.k.a. Democrat, a.k.a. liberalism. I mean, put a name on it, whatever it is. But all roads lead to really the same place, people. So today, that's the conversation. But I want to bring back to that big question I asked you up front. What if President Trump loses in 2020? Are you prepared for that, people? And we're going to talk about what can we do and what can we do about it. That's a big question as well. I want to answer today with you. We have a terrific group of people coming on here. We're going to bring on first here Baruch Plettner. Let me tell you about Baruch and a very interesting piece that he wrote as well that I want to tell you about. And then we've got a star-studded group of folks coming on after that in just a bit here. We'll open this conversation up for full throttle ahead here. Let me tell you first about Baruch. He's an entrepreneur. He's a scientist, an inventor. He is passionate about education, the war on globalism, and more than that, he is the editor-in-chief of Zionism.com. He's terrific. His writings are fantastic. And he's got a piece out there that we'll reference in this post later. It's called "The American Federal Republic is Well on Its Way to Being Replaced by a Bolshevik Totalitarian State." Now, Baruch, that was quite a piece you wrote, and I want to start and talk about the roots of that a little bit here. You say here something very, very interesting. Let me throw it at you, and then let's talk about this. You say the American Constitution, a document that is diametrically opposed to Bolshevik-style totalitarianism, gave Americans two ways of affecting their lives through the instrument of voting. They could vote with their hands, that makes sense, electing representatives, who faithfully reflected their values and desires. That's called an election, people, right? And they could vote with their feet by moving to another state should they find themselves in the minority in their own. The Bolshevikization of America, a project that started around the time of the Bolshevik takeover of the Russian Empire, has now all but succeeded in disenfranchising Americans from both of these voting methods. The policies that most affect Americans, from abortion to environmental regulations, are not made by elected officials at any level of elected government. They are made in the bowels of the unelected federal bureaucracy we call the deep state. Since these policies are made at the federal level, moving from one state to another offers only limited reprieve from their effects. Baruch, that to me is, that's That is well said. And that's a big piece of that article I just referenced a moment ago here. Explain to us really where you were going with that and why Americans should be truly concerned.
I like to think how people used to live as opposed to how we live. And if you go back to the first century of America's existence, if you were an American living in New York, in North Carolina, in Georgia, anywhere, what affected your life the most was legislation that was passed in your state legislature. Going now forward to our time today, if you're an American living anywhere in America, what affects your life is regulation, not legislation, that's made not at your state level, but at the federal level. And that is a vast difference, because what it means is that when you vote, and you vote for your congressperson, you vote for your senator, and even for the president, your vote doesn't count nearly as much as it used to. And on the state level, if you live in California, but you're a conservative, and you want to go to a more conservative place, yes, you can move to Texas, and it will be somewhat more conservative and a freer environment, but not really that much, because most of the regulation, environmental, firearms, the stuff around, let's say, protected groups, sexual orientation, race relations, employment law, all of that is federal. And it's done by regulation by people who you never know who they are and you never elected them. And that comes very close to totalitarian regimes, and in particular the kind of the Bolshevik regimes of the old Soviet Union and of China today, with Bolshevism being really the kind of the practical application of the theory of communism. So that's really where I'm coming from on this topic.
Yeah, this is so well said, what you say, Baruch. And you really made me think. And I hope everybody out there right now is thinking when you hear Baruch here talk about this here. What he's really saying is it's the buildup of the government apparatus. Friends, it's all these agencies and the layers and layers and layers and layers of government that are put into place over time now, all for the betterment of, really, and I'm going to say this, it's not going to sound nice, but all for the betterment of lazy people. Who want someone else to do it all for them. And they don't want to get off their backside and make a go of their own lives. And that, to me, is the core of a lot of this stuff, sadly. But I like to keep it in simple terms. I love the way you put that out there and the way you build it all the way back to the Bolshevik and talk about this government buildup and apparatus. The other thing is, Baruch, is this. Back to the framers, my friend. There was a lot of conversation back then, which we don't have today, about states' rights, which we need to talk a lot mm-hmm. more about this ahead in the future as well, because you threaded that needle real well moments ago. You see, in order to have a takeover, and I think you would agree with me, Baruch, you got to get the feds get more empowered. They get bigger, fatter, bigger, and the states' rights slowly but surely go away. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not even that slowly. And they're actually disappearing with alarming speed. This is not a linear process. It started a long time ago, like actually around the same time of the Soviet or the Russian Revolution, 100 years ago. It started also in America, with Woodrow Wilson and so on. Yeah. But it started at that time very slowly. But since then, and especially through the Obama administration, it accelerated. Actually, even the Bush administration. It started to accelerate, and now it's quite fast. And the one thing that I didn't mention previously is the judiciary. Mm-hmm. Probably the biggest effect on the kind of the effacement, the erasure of state rights is the federal judiciary, including and mostly the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. Because there cannot be a state in America that chooses to make abortion illegal because the Supreme Court has decided that this is a human right, a right of any American woman is to have an abortion. So no state in the union can now decide that that's not true. The same with gay marriage. How about, a state decides that, well, you know what? Gay marriage is great in California and Massachusetts, but us here in, let's say, Mississippi, not so much. Well, no, that can't happen either. Why? Because the Supreme Court has decided that gay marriage is a right that applies to all Americans. So on a very fundamental level, the states being the defining factor in how you live your life is pretty much gone in America. It's finished.
So what happens now as we now come to a new election cycle? And Baruch, darn well, we always hear the words, and you know as well as I do, we always hear the words, this is the most important election of our lifetime. I hear that every election cycle pretty much, because I think what I've come to as a conclusion here, Baruch, is every election is important. But people say that a fair amount. But, I have to tell you, back when, I love what you just said a moment ago, too, because back to where Barack Obama had the 8 years, we knew that the country was headed in a very perilous direction here. And we knew that we were being indoctrinated into some really far left Marxist policies and programs. But you're so right when you say that this was exactly started on Bush's watch. And this has been building now for about 30 some odd years, longer than that. But where it really started to get on fast pace more with the first Bush, the Clinton, the next Bush, Obama. This is all deep state building and apparatus here that's happened over many, many years. And so here we are now. And you're right when you say it's kind of on full speed as well, because when you look through the Obama years and you see all that had happened, it was on full speed. And if we hadn't changed the trajectory of the country in 2016, I imagine we'd be in a heap of trouble right now in a big way. And thank God that the Lord always sets us back straight. If we go too far left or even too far right to the extremist viewpoints, we tend to come back to a more common sense approach to our life. So here's what I want to ask you here, please, as we transition there. Tell me in your view, Baruch, what happens if President Trump loses in 2020? Give me your scenario and your crystal ball now. What is the next 4 to 8 years like? And where does the country sit at that point, my friend?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually, I want to preface it by saying that I'm not one of those people who are in the Trump can do no wrong camp. But if Trump loses to one of those characters that are running against him, it will be a disaster for America. And it will actually complete the destruction of America. It will be a true revolution in a sense that the America that came to be in the 1780s will literally be no more. It's close to that right now, but there are still remnants of that exist. If Trump loses this election, those remnants will disappear. And I'll just say two things about that. Being a scientist, I like to offer proof to my hypotheses. And there are two pieces. One is, there's this thinking among people who allow themselves to be complacent, that the crazier ideas that the Democratic challengers and candidates for president are offering will never be implemented. And that is simply not true. We know, for example, from empirical experience, that in places like New York City, like California as a state, and cities in California like San Francisco and LA, those policies that those candidates want to push on a federal level are being implemented with the predicted results, with rapid and drastic increases in homelessness, in communicable diseases, in public health, in public safety deterioration of those things. So all these policies, all these crazy, what we would call crazy, but really it's those Bolshevik policies that some people would say, oh, that would never happen. Somebody would stop it. Big business would stop it. Cooler heads would prevail. Well, no, cooler heads are not prevailing. Cooler heads are not prevailing when Bill de Blasio is destroying New York cooler heads are not prevailing when San Francisco, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, the gems of our, you know, of our, of the Western civilization, is being, I mean, destroyed completely. Where are the cooler heads? You know, where are they? Why isn't anybody stopping that? So nobody's going to stop it. That's one thing. We know that empirically. But there's I'll briefly mention another thing, which is something that the Bolsheviks pioneered 100 years ago, and one of the kind of the more egregious and atrocious things that they invented, and that's the manipulation of children to achieve their nefarious end. And we see that now in America very, very clearly with that Swedish girl Greta, right, with her eco craziness.
That's right.
With this climate strike that kids and basically what they're doing is they're taking children in that age where they are the most impressionable, the most susceptible to propaganda, which I guess is that, you know, teenager kind of years between, 12 and let's say 17, 18. And we all know, I mean, as parents of teenagers, we all know that those are difficult years. Those are years that kids formulate kind of their worldview. They're very impressionable. They're easily susceptible to propaganda. They become frightened. They have no experience. And especially today where there's a lot of single parent families, you know, that the kids don't attend church. There are few positive influences in their lives. So they become even more open to this, you know, pernicious propaganda. And we see that right now where American children are being weaponized against America and against everything that America stands for or ever stood for. And if, God forbid, one of those Democratic challengers defeats Trump, one thing to look out for, and this will happen, there will be a tremendous increase in the weaponization of American children against their own parents. That's what will happen.
You're listening there to the voice of Baruch Plettner. And I have to tell you, he has some strong words there you just heard. People, you really should take that to heart, what you were just listening to, without a doubt here. You know, the exploitation of children and where we're at right now and how they're being used, he is exactly right. They're being used against families and they're being used to push their policies. And the reference of children's with the climate change conversation, that was one of the most well-read articles from Dr. Jay Lehrer on the America Out Loud platform this past month, in fact. Because it hit the nitty gritty of what he was just talking about. So I love being able to bring this all to you in a 1-2 punch here. What I want to do now is we're on a roll here. We're going to open this conversation up here now and bring on. So this is an amazing conversation today, I have to tell you. And you're about to hear some other extraordinary voices. And this is the best of the best here today. So I am on a super high here. I'm going to ask you to pause there just a moment, friends, and we'll be back with more Voice of a Nation in just a moment.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
The question I always get asked is, where do I get the energy from? Well, keeping up with Malcolm Out Loud is no easy task, friends, even for Malcolm. Well, you may know that I've personally been taking Healthy Cell for some time now. Well, the great news is Healthy Cell has a new type of natural supplement called the Nutrition Gel. So no more hard-to-swallow pills. The good-tasting gel can be mixed into smoothies, yogurt, or water. These gels provide maximum absorption of essential nutrients, and it's healthy for our gut, not abrasive like pills can be. You know, it's time for all of us to go pill-free. And you can try it with a free 2-day supply. Just cover $2.95 shipping, and the company, Healthy Cell, will cover the cost of the product. Go to healthycell.com/outloud, or simply click the Healthy Cell logo at the top of AmericaOutloud.com. What if Trump loses in 2020? What do we have? Now, one of the things I so appreciate what Baruch Plettner said in the opening remarks was this, And when he talks about the approach of a lot of the candidates on the left and where the country would go, I think you got a real sense, people, of where we're at. So we're not of the club here that Trump can do no wrong. That's the question, the point here. I want to remind you, because I know we have a lot of major Trump followers, and we respect that and we appreciate that. But we're more about the Republic and saving America than we are any one individual. We don't, this takes a collective group of unique people. This is not a Superman approach to saving the world, people. But he's an important point of this right now because he happens to be in the Oval Office. So enough, again, you get the point of what I'm saying to you. Enough said on that, but it's important to say that. But so when we talk about what if, so we're talking about what if we all lose because we think he represents many of the values that are put out there from conservatives and to what, where the framers were at in a better America and all the things that excite us about this life, people. That's what we're talking about here. So again, Baruch is back with us now as we continue on with the conversation here again. Now, again, just to remind you, Baruch is editor-in-chief of Zionism.com. He's a fabulous talent and a quality speaker here. We'd always love to have him on here. But also we've got amazing people here. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro is here. These are some of my favorite people right here you're going to meet right now, people. So Joe Pangaro is here, retired police lieutenant. Director of school security, the owner of True Security Design, and host of Chasing Justice. Now, before I bring on the others here, Joe, I want to stay with you initially here, and I want to ask you now, you heard Baruch Plettner in that amazing open, and I know I could just read your mind as you were thinking. I could sense your brain waves moving there, buddy, through the line here, more or less, I guess. But so let me pose that up to you and give you the floor for a couple of moments and tell me, so what if, as you hear the scenario Baruch puts out there, what do you think about that scenario? And I'm asking a tough question right up front. What if Trump loses in 2020? Where are we at?
Well, first of all, I want to thank everybody for having me on, especially you, Malcolm. You know, when I've written about this for the platform couple of times. It's part of a lot of the shows that I'm doing. I see all of us like the frogs in the bucket of water, and the heat is slowly being turned up. And that heat is this rising tide of socialism that Baruch is talking about. Mm-hmm. We're all busy, you know, most of us as conservatives and Republicans, we don't go out and protest. We don't show up, a million of us in Washington, to demand things because we're busy doing other things. And there is always that feeling in the background that, hey, almost every time America's had a problem, we have made the right turn at that most drastic moment to do the right thing. But I see us as the frogs in that bucket of water. And what's unfortunately what I'm seeing is, I think what Baruch is seeing there, is as that water heats up, it's going to get to the point where it's going to be too hard to jump out. So it's not an overnight thing. If Trump loses this election, what we're going to see is the ushering in of a left-wing type of a president who, if they have Congress, if they had the Congress, it's going to go much, much quicker, obviously, because they would be able to implement everything in spite of any of our voices. Our voices mattered very, very little when Barack Obama was elected because he had both houses of Congress. He flooded the courts with liberals. And they did give us things that, you know, we're still trying to dismantle how many years later that were detrimental to our country. So I see that as a real and absolute problem. You will see regulation return with a vengeance, which will choke off the economy, which will choke off small business, large corporations, and damage. You know, the one thing that we have that's keeping us going is our economy. You start to shut that down, and that's when people are going to find themselves in need, when they're out of work again. And what happens then? Then you have to turn to somebody to feed you and turn your heat on and give you a place to live. You turn to the government, and that is the socialist bastion of what they hope we all end up getting to. That's what this dependence thing is all about. So that is exactly my fear of what I see happening if Trump loses. Not an immediate thing, but it would start that boil even harder, and I don't think we could recover from it again. There are too many people who want that handout, who want that government daddy to take care of everything because they don't think they can. And the other point I wanted to make, when he talked about using children, we see this so clearly in historical senses where people have used the youth to come after their parents, namely a lot of communist and socialist type of nations, where these kids coming out the other day, they weren't just protesting climate change as if we have something to do with it. They were out protesting capitalism. They were protesting the forefathers. You saw the different signs. They are attacking our very history. And if those children will very soon reach the age of maturity, they will be able to vote. They're going to vote all of this away in a single election on a Tuesday afternoon without a shot being fired.
Mm. And Joe, when you say, well, the conservatives are not out protesting and picketing and that sort of thing, and you're exactly right. They don't have the success of the marches, Joe, and all of the stuff that the left is very good at. And here's the other thing I want to add to what you said. It was important we remind people. See, being active in life and in politics and the world is very important. There are a lot of people who are ignorant to this is the problem. They don't stay engaged. But here's the other thing about what you say there, Joe, is this movement again of Americans, patriots, conservatives, people who are busy running their working their lives and making money, what have you. Not only that, they not out protesting and picketing and being active, but in 2018, they also didn't get out and vote, which is why the left socialists took back over the House in Congress. And here's the other problem with the people you're talking about, Joe. They also are not buying the tech companies. They're not buying the social media companies. They're not buying the newspapers, the networks, the television networks, which is why the rise of an outfit like America Out Loud is so important, Joe. It's why you talk about it very much so in a proper way that, hey, you know, we need to brag on what we're doing here. But you see, that's another point that's missing. And so when you get the far left socialist, radical Marxist people who own all of that stuff and are out protesting, now they have a megaphone and they can control the conversation at the water cooler, Joe. Do you see what I mean?
I absolutely do. And when you talk to, you know, regular, normal people that are working every day, my family, my friends, you know, the guys in the neighborhood,
that's right.
You know, other than those particular fellas in the neighborhood who are very astute and understand what's going on, the average person is living their life. That's they right. do not see this danger approaching them. And at some point, I think we do slip over the edge. And then it's going to take, like our forefathers, wow. that are going to have to pledge their fortunes, their honor, and their very lives to knock that pot off the stove to save us. And that's going to be a whole different world.
It is. It is. And, you know, I got chills when you said that just now, Joe, because you know what I realized at that point, people, that it's up to us. What that was, what Lieutenant Joe just said there, is a rallying call for my internal mechanism to say, okay, Malcolm, that's why we do what we do here. This is why this is so important. And Joe puts it out there so well. So you got it, Joe. You got it. You got my vote, whatever you're running for, brother. No problem. So, all right,
I'll lead the revolution, Malcolm.
I'll tell you, I'll be right with you, brother. And I think Baruch will be right with us and Susan and Arnetta as well. Let me bring on now Susan Price, please. Susan is an investigative researcher. She's a patriot, a veteran advocate. She's a Gold Star mother. She's a big voice in America for freedom and for really conservatism and bringing back what freedom is designed for, and what we all are trying to grab back to this power that Joe and Baruch put out there so well and say, you know, no. We want to have a free society here, a free America here. So, Susan, so you hear this amazing conversation now where we're talking about here and what happens. As we now draw the scenario out, Susan, of where we're at, where does this go in your mind with the scenario that rightfully, you know, okay, so the election happens, Trump does not win it, there were enough people that voted to the left, the right didn't get out and vote properly, and they won it, and now does that become the decline of America?
Well, Malcolm, I've had this conversation with my daughters, my brothers and sisters, and what we do in my family, and also when you brought me on to add to the list of things that I am, I'm a mother, the giver of life, and I'm a grandmother, I'm a nana. Those are the most important things to me and the children. And you know, you've heard me many, many times talk about the children. And our family, we educate our children. We left them, we filled in the blanks, what's missing in history. We start at home and we have groups of friends. We work in our communities, our churches. We do a pushback where it comes to school. If we don't like something, we voice our opinion. And our children know. And so that's where it starts with us. Everything that all the gentlemen before me named, we do that. We're involved with all that. But our children have to know what they don't know that we do, the history that's missing from our books. And when we send them to school, what's not being taught at the dinner table and the homes and churches and families.
It hardly can be said better than that, Susan, because what you're speaking about now is the family table, what I tell you people all the time out there, the family dinner table and the school, because it all starts in our homes, at our dinner tables, and in our schools, our education, which is another problem. Back to what Pangaro was talking about a moment ago, where they're not actively out there doing X. They're not also in the universities and teaching the kids. The liberal indoctrination has taken over a lot of that as well. And so we're looking at an Orwellian sort of environment now as we're going down this road here that is obviously all too, there's too much clarity here at the moment here, Arnetta. We're starting to think here and we're starting to look at this thing to say, okay, is this really, really happening? So let me bring on now Arnetta Notkin. Arnetta's a producer, commentator here at America Out Loud. She has spent a terrific career, over 30 years working on Wall Street, is a thinker, and quite concerned with the trajectory of our country and the path that we're on. There are days it seems quite perilous, Arnetta, but there's always hope and optimism as an American that we snap out of it. And we come back to the roots of what our framers envisioned for this republic. What do you say to this thought and to the fact if Trump loses in 2020, please?
Well, I can tell you emphatically, you can bet your bippy it's happening. I live in a state that is already Venezuela. And the country, if Trump loses, will become Venezuela. Right now, I have a few freedoms left in California. Not many. The middle class, as this will happen with the rest of the country, will be destroyed. There'll be the elite, there'll be the serfs. We will lose our currency. We will lose our banking. We will lose our homes. We will become homeless. We are non-entity to these people who want to rule the world. They have to take the country down first to do it. So if President Trump is not reelected, it might take another 4 years, 8 years, but by 2024, they will have control of Congress. They will have control of every aspect of our life, and we will have no control at all. California is the canary in the gold mine, and it's gasping for breath if it hasn't already died for the rest of the country.
Yeah. And of course, as you know, Arnetta, we had a segment on our weekend show on Viewpoint this past weekend on talking about California. And you know, I also have to tell you, Arnetta, that this is why Dr. Ron and Linda Martinelli, our esteemed colleagues there on the show Talking While Married, they always talk about, they call it Calizuela, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, Calizuela, because they moved out of California a couple of years back now. It's not been too long, just a couple of years, because it was getting so bad. And there does appear to be an exodus there. Some people consider that sort of a experiment for where they want to take the nation. And as Baruch had mentioned up front when he referenced San Francisco and Los Angeles, and it's almost like they're in a state of denial almost, like they don't even really understand. But let me tell you why. People, listen, take the wax out of your ears and listen to me now. They understand full well what they're doing. They understand full well. And so this whole talk about where they want to take the nation, and, you know, you hear a lot about this globalist movement, and then you see these power brokers come in, and as Baruch had also mentioned about the climate part of that. See, these are just scare tactics. In other words, we have a war going on right now on multiple fronts. You see, climate's just one front, but we have it on the homelessness front. We have it on the education front. We have it in certainly our classroom front. We have it at the state municipality front. We have a war in America right now on multiple fronts.
The silent majority has spoken. We say, let the silent voices be heard. You can be the voice of change. contact our producer at liberty@americaoutloud.com. liberty@americaoutloud.com.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Brooke, you just heard from some interesting people. I mean, they're on the line with us, still on the call here. These are some of the best and the best of America, Brooke. Lieutenant Joe Pancaro, Gold Star Mother Susan Price, and our esteemed colleague Arnetta Notkin is here. These people are on the front lines. And you know, Brooke, what I find is there are a lot of good people out there who passionately care about this. Well, they care about their lives, number one. They care about the nation and the direction of the republic. When you hear the cross-section of people you just heard, Brooke, what comes to your mind? Does that give you hope? And I'm just curious to ask you, because does that give you pause? Does that give you hope when we have this bigger conversation that there are more out there like this?
I cannot say that I'm overly hopeful for the short term. But, you know, what Susan said, for example, gave me a lot of hope for the long term. And I'll tell you why, because I was born in the Soviet Union and lived there for the first 10 years of my life, and before we moved to Israel. And I remember very clearly, like one of my first memories actually, was my parents telling me to never ever believe a word that my teachers were telling me in school. They basically told me that unless it's math, don't believe it. So in other words, If you're in math class, that's fine. Any other class, math, science, I guess, any other class, regurgitate it for grades, you know, just spit it out. Don't inhale, because it's all lies. And what Susan said about is, you know, unfortunately, that's what you have to do now in America. My kids are grown, but if I had a school-age child, boy or girl, And actually, my youngest is at a Canadian university, and I told her many times, she's a science student, but I told her, listen, if you have to go to some mandatory, you know, sexual harassment thing, whatever, sit there, smile, don't smile, do not listen. Do not let that garbage into your soul, into your brain. And actually, I follow up with her. Like, if I know she went to one of these, next time we talk, I'm like, so, did they manage to indoctrinate you yet? And she was like, no, Daddy, you know, I know you told me, you know. It's very, very important. They're poisoning our children. This is no joke. They're telling them lies, but this is not lies. This is weaponized lies. This is not propaganda. This is what the Russians used to call agitprop. This is agitational propaganda. They're trying to agitate the children to make them into the enemies of freedom, into the enemies of religion, into the enemies of God, into the enemies of anything and everything that's wholesome and holy. And we have to fight that. And we have to fight that from a perspective of kind of like insurgency. We have to adopt this insurgent mindset, because we are already, we don't feel it that way, especially with Trump in the White House, and the Senate still under some sort of kind of Republican control. But we have to be, we have to understand, we are in the minority now. We are the insurgents. We have to adopt those guerrilla tactics. We have to be very, very active. Like the same thing in your office. You have to go to some seminar or other about diversity, about this, about that. Well, if you have to go, go. Don't lose your job. You have to put food on the table. But don't listen. Don't absorb it. Don't let it poison your soul, because it will. Mm-hmm. So you have to adopt. And in Soviet Union, people who were anti-communist, that's what they did. they basically adopted these kinds of insurgency tactics. They met in secret, and that's what you kind of have to do now in America, you know, because if it ever gets out that you are a conservative and that you have these views, you may lose your job, right? You may be deplatformed, you know, your bank may cancel your credit card, all kinds of stuff like that may happen. So you have to learn to be, you know, again, to be like a guerrilla fighter, right? Let me just say one thing in terms of practical, like what Lieutenant Joe here said. If we get a Democrat in the White House with a Congress and a Senate, what's to stop them from passing a bill that will be signed by the president that the Constitution of the United States is null and void because it was passed by racist white men? And racist white men cannot possibly have produced anything but a piece of garbage, substantially, right? Yeah. In other words, that the Constitution of the United States is the fruit of a poison tree, to use a legal language, right? And therefore, it's out the window. It's gone. What will we do then?
Yeah, well, that's a hell of a thing to put out there, Brooke. What you're saying is there's consequences for a lot of the stuff they're talking about. And in other words, Brooke, when they're talking about, they're doing it, actually, taking down the statue. Oh, yeah. Dismantling,
yes, and
they've come out in full throttle against many of our presidents, and our historical, the historical aspect of our country. They're in denial. In other words, Brooke, they don't want this to like it never happened or something. And boy, that's a hell of a scenario you put out there. That maybe that's the it's what you say sounds like totally like crazy, insane. I want to say to you, but you know what? the whole conversation we're having right now is crazy and insane, quite frankly, you know?
It's not so crazy when, as a country, we elected a president, a non-vetted person, who was negotiating and working with other world leaders, allies, and enemies, making deals with radical extremists for the overthrow of this country. What Baruch is saying is not extreme. It came very close to happening already.
Yeah. And you're speaking, of course, the president, the 44th president of these United States here. And he was as close to he definitely had a Marxist, more than just a bone or two in his body, clearly. And where he was taking the country, you could see that in the way that he has his policies. And not only that, but I will say something else that some people won't like. But the amount and level of, and again, I know this doesn't sound nice, people, but it happens to be gospel truth. But a lot of the, he put a record amount in number of Muslims in the United States government. We never had that many before, is what he put in there. He also put a lot of people in the deep state apparatus, which is why Trump is having such a hard time today. You see, one of the reasons the media, they're more than complicit. They are evidence number 101 as to far as back to what Brooke. I mean, this is a hell of a thing what we got going here, because, you know, the megaphone of the nation, the fourth estate, what the framers put out there to protect us and keep the government honest. These people are sleeping with the enemy. They are the enemy. They're in cahoots with this whole thing, Joe. That's a problem.
It absolutely is, because you do not get anyone really looking at anything and bringing out facts for people to make their choices on. It's all sound bites. And when most people listen to the overwhelming media, which is to the left, whether it's music stations, whether it is sports stations now have all these left-wing commentators, or whether it's the news or what passes for hard news, you have nothing but that one opinion. And that's the average person is not seeking this stuff out. They're listening to their favorite local news station, and that climate stuff is going to kill us all. I saw a little girl the other day with that strike that Brooke was talking about, and she says she is physically upset and sickened to her stomach every day that this global climate thing is going to kill her and her family. And she's like 14 or 15 years old, physically shaken every day that's going to happen. That tells you right there, they have a hold of these children. And what are those kids going to do? The minute they get a chance to fix the problem, they're going to do it. And one way we fix it is get rid of this horrible capitalism that allows these billionaires and millionaires to pollute the planet, because they must have their own supply of fresh air and fresh water somewhere. Because, otherwise, what are they doing? But the media is absolutely not serving our country the way it was intended. And when you have that kind of a megaphone and that power, you can make a difference in everyone's life.
Oh, my golly, boy, is that well said, my friend. You know, they're all going to head to Mars with Elon Musk, Joe, is where they're going to head. Back to the fresh air they're looking for, potentially. They can suck all that red dirt up, you know, in their lungs, maybe. So let me read this to you, Joe, and let's talk about what can we do. Now, I want everybody to stop what you're doing at home or in your business or in your car. Don't stop your car if you're driving, but just pay attention here is what I'm asking you to do, please. Okay? All right, so let me read this to you, please. This is important. So Baruch says in his article there, and that article will be attached to this post, by the way, so you can absolutely read it, and it's a full entirety here. It's called The American Federal Republic is well on its way to being replaced by Bolshevik totalitarian state, and you'll want to read that fully. Let me read this to you, please. Now it's important here. It is not true that a violent takeover of America is coming. Now, when I say that first sentence, you would say, what are you talking about? Baruch just said differently. Come on. He says, no, it's not true that a violent takeover of America is coming. It is already here. It just hasn't been completed yet. There are many things each of us can do. The first one is to fully internalize that violence in the defense of self, of family, of community, and of homeland is not only immoral or illegal, it is a legal and moral imperative. Make yourself capable of violence. Train for it. Educate yourself what weapons you can legally carry in your jurisdiction. Make your body into a weapon. Refuse at all costs to be the victim of violence. Fight back as hard as you can. Wow. You say, above all, remember this. The Bolshevik, Bolshevism has never succeeded. It runs contrary to human nature, and it always loses in the end. Resistance is far from futile. If we resist now, we can defeat them before we are subjugated for several generations, like the Russians or the Chinese. Or the Martians, for that matter, potentially, huh? And then he says our children will thank us. All right, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, that is some fighting words there, I have to tell you. Back to the pots and pans. So let me give it to you for a moment here. Tell us, what can we do as Americans?
Well, I got to say, Baruch, that is absolutely a tremendous thing you wrote there. Now, I have talked about this for a long time, this coming revolution, whether it be hot or cold, civil war or revolution. We need to, first and foremost, use our words. So we have to stand up, write to your congresspeople all the time, call them, blow their phone boards up by phone calls telling them that they're not going to do the right thing. If people aren't going to do the right thing, even if they're on our side, primary them, get somebody else in there, cut their power out from under them and take back over. We need to take to the streets. We need to learn like the other side does. Why don't we have a rally of our own in Washington? Why don't we all get together somewhere and have something where we can get together and make our voices heard? Why don't we do that? You know what? I think we have to do that. And that goes along with Baruch, what you're saying there. Prepare ourselves for what could be coming, because I'm not going down when that happens. But I got to tell you what, if we could do other things first, we might be able to save it. And our children will thank us for it. It's fallen to us, the mantle of freedom of America. I never thought it would fall to our generation to preserve this for mankind, but it has. And if we just sit here and watch it pass us while we wait for someone else to save us, there's no way that we can ever be forgiven for that.
Yeah. Wow. You really got me thinking there, buddy. Susan Price, what can we do?
Well, of course, everything Baruch and Joe said, and stay vigilant. But probably the most important thing besides knowledge is power, to know who some of these bad people are affiliated with, what organizations, what corporations, and don't feed into them anymore. Take their money away. Stop spending money at certain places. Mm-hmm. For instance, Starbucks. We know that they're just anti-American. So that's a big thing. And teach your children that, because they'll go and tell their friends. And it, you know, word of mouth is still the biggest means of getting the word out there. And I stand by it. Take their dollars away from them.
That's really good, Susan. You're saying really vote with your wallet, huh? Play with your wallet, right? I mean, use the wallet.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
money talks.
The money talks, and you know what walks, love. We won't say it here, but we know what that is. Now, let's get on to Arnetta. We're, Arnetta, what do you think? What can we do here?
Well, the first thing I would recommend is we get off that pedestal of the higher road that we've placed ourselves on. And take pride in taking. The higher road will not exist for us if this happens. We need to be prepared. The first people that need to be the most prepared are the senior citizens, the elderly, the people who are not well, and the women, because they become prey in a situation like this. We are looked as weaker, not necessary, but in fact, we are very strong as women. We need to prepare, look at our heart and soul, look at the ability and truly recognize, do you have that ability to take a life, to defend your home, your family, your child, and then your community? If you don't, then find like-minded people who do and become friends, close friends. But you train your body, you get strong, you learn what weapon you can use, and you take advantage of it, you learn how to use it, and you prepare your home.
Yeah. You know, Arnetta, that's exactly when you say like-minded people. I guess that's sort of very much why the rise of America Out Loud has happened, Arnetta. It's home to the like-minded people, right? I mean, it's home to patriots and conservatives and people of great value who want to get back to the origins and the basics of our nation and are not willing to mortgage it and finance it away. We've seen this. It has come now on a fast-paced environment. Baruch, you're right when you point out in the piece and when you commented early on in the conversation today that we're sort of on a fast-paced warp speed sort of now. It's like a bad 45 RPM that's playing, and now we're like, you know, you hear that noise, Baruch, you know. But you hear all the voices here of some amazing folks here. I read that paragraph of your right in there, so what do you want to add to the story here? What else can we do, sir?
Well, I mean, just to elaborate on the practicality of it, you know, what or why I wrote it. What worries me, for example, is that somehow it became normalized and mainstream thinking in America that if somebody, let's say, like those kids a while back with that Native American guy, whatever, like if you're out in the street with, let's say, a red Make America Great Again hat, right? So for some reason, it's understood now that anyone, just anyone, random person, can walk up to you and knock that hat off your head. And my question is, why? Nobody has the right to come into your face, to remove from you violently any kind of piece of clothing. This is assault. There is no right in America to assault anyone, you know, on the street or anywhere for that matter. So why all of a sudden has that become an acceptable thing to do? And my point is, it's not acceptable. So if somebody does that to you, think ahead. Like as a pilot, I also know you always plan. What happens if my engine, before you ever take off, you always run through the scenario of what happens if my engine quits on takeoff? What am I going to do? Because you have to be prepared. You have to act immediately without thinking. Well, you know, if somebody knocks your hat off, how about you use the palm of your hand to hit their nose? You're defending yourself. That's what you're doing, right? You're defending yourself. If you have a legal license to conceal carry, how about you raise your shirt and show them your handgun? You know what I mean? Like, make sure that they understand that you're not going to be victimized. Now, I'm not suggesting any illegal actions here. I'm not saying that you should, you know, shoot to kill if somebody touches, you know, your ball cap. But at the same time, you have to have the mindset that nobody has the right to victimize you for your beliefs. Nobody has the right to victimize you for your political viewpoint. And if they try to do that, there are certainly ways that you can put a stop to it and make certain that they will not continue with that course of action. You just have to have that mindset, and you have to know what you're going to do before it happens. And that way, you will become an effective member of society and defend not only your freedom, but everybody's freedom.
Yeah, very much so. Well, our nation was built on diversity of opinion. This is the basis of America, people. And slowly but surely, it seems to be becoming our undoing, if you will. And there is something about, big time, what Brooke says there about even wearing a red cap today has become a flashpoint because the media has made it a flashpoint and the political operatives to the far left, clearly. But again, they're actively out there in their marches and their protests, and they're very clever the way they've built this whole apparatus of the megaphone that they have. So that leads back to the pots and pans theory, back to what I'm talking about with you all today and why that's highly important, what we're doing here. A lot of this comes down again to the basis of the rise of what we're doing here at America Out Loud, friends. And this show in particular, The Voice of a Nation, you know, it was with great pride and great thought in putting this name together, The Voice of a Nation. There was a point to calling this show The Voice of a Nation, people, because the voices you just heard here right now of Baruch Plettner, Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro, Gold Star Mother Susan Price, and Arnetta Nockin here. These people are the voice of a nation. There are a lot of people out there that are the voice of a nation that need to be heard. I say let the silent voices be heard from day one when we launched this in April 2016. That was the mantra, let the silent voices be heard. It is our rallying call here, people, and it is our motivation to move this nation forward for a lot of reasons. It is our mandate. It is my mandate. It is God's mandate. It is why I've been put here. I am simply a vessel of hope, a vessel of opportunity, a vessel of thought, a vessel of diversity, of opinion, and all the beautiful things that make America rich. The fabric of America is what I'm speaking about. It's the core, people. It's the core of my heart, my soul, my DNA, and I know many of you as well. It's that core of our being that get us up in the morning and pridefully take on the next chapter the next day. Now, we must make our voices rise louder. We must get there with those pots and pans. And you know you're going to hear that again from me, the pots and pans. You know darn well. And you'll see me in the parade with the pots and pans and the loud spoons and the voice, the out loud voice that God has gifted me with. And I will continue to bring that here to you on America Out Loud. But I need you to do your part. Get off the sofa and knock it off. Get involved here. Get your friends, get your neighbors, get your other people to also grab a pot and pan, please, and be involved in this process. As you listen to all of this here, it's important we all take hold and we fight for the future of our lives and the future of the United States of America here, people. There's a lot at stake here. And so what if, well, on the other scenario, I'll leave you with this, people. What if we fight back, and what if we change the trajectory of where these far-left radical socialists want to take it, and what if we care just a little bit more? What if? And then where are we at? You better believe it. Friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.